to make the blood have more oxygen. When they were preparing to leave the craft, the tall one communicated to her that he would come again and check on her. She felt comfortable with him and thought she knew him. He said they had been together before she came into this life, and he was really very old. The next instant she found herself back in bed in her home. Her mind was filled with questions that quickly dissipated as she drifted asleep. In the morning there was no memory of the event except the dream that suggested they had harmed her by removing her blood. It was now obvious that they tried to help her, and she had caused the damage to her body herself through the constant vomiting created by bulimia. Her doctors were concerned, because her blood count was so low they couldn't understand how she was functioning at all, and said she should have been unconscious. Her subconscious communicated to me that there should be no worry about the abnormally low blood count. That was now normal for her, and she was able to function quite well with it. The blood count means nothing. It's just a low count. A low count is normally an indication of oxygen. Her oxygen supply is greater even though it is smaller. The damage to the stomach area had been repaired, and the doctors would find nothing with their tests. It would probably just be recorded as a mystery, and as long as Edith was having no physical problems, it was best left alone. This case shows the problem between the conscious mind interpreting a disturbing dream and arriving at the wrong conclusion, and the correct understanding of the situation coming from deep trance hypnosis. When we discussed this after she was awake, she could understand that her perception of the memory of the dream was false. The beings on the craft had not harmed her, but actually had repaired the damage she herself had caused through her vanity and self-doubt. Chapter 5, Buried Memories. Just as dreams can sometimes hide real experiences that are deep in the subconscious, so can memories be distorted through time. As children, we perceive things in a simpler, more naive way. What is often traumatic to a child is viewed differently by the adult that child has become. Often the memory of an event is buried because it was traumatic or painful to remember. Under hypnosis, when the memory is found and relived, it is often seen to not be so threatening after all. It can be looked at and understood by the adult. I have had clients who wanted to remember a forgotten incident. They thought because they had forgotten it or suppressed it that it must have been something very terrible. Under hypnosis, it is often found to be an event that could easily be explained. For instance, a misdeed or an act of mischief that caused the parents to be angry. It does not have to involve physical punishment to cause the event to be suppressed. Often it is the mere fact that the parents were angry. Add to this, the now popular explanation that somehow UFOs and aliens were involved if something has been suppressed. In 9 cases out of 10 I have found no alien involvement at all. This is why I tell investigators to always start with the simple rather than the complex. In other words, look for the simplest 145, 146, the custodians, logical explanation, before bringing in the bizarre. When using the deepest levels of hypnosis, the real truth will always surface. It cannot be hidden, unless telling lies or fabricating is a normal part of the subject's life. In which case they could lie or fantasize, because it is part of their nature. But such cases are rare, and their story does not hold up. If they are fantasizing, the story will not remain constant, but will change with the retelling. It will be embroidered as new details are added. Also, the story will not fit the pattern I have discovered. There is always the possibility that I do not have all the pieces that make up a pattern. Someone could come up with a story that presents a totally different side that I have not explored. Thus, I must be open to that possibility, and not close all the doors automatically. But even if a new way of thinking is introduced, there will still be elements that fit the pattern. It is obvious that the job of an investigator is not easy, especially if it is combined with therapy. It is only because I am open to all possibilities that the following cases emerged. Fran was a divorced woman in her 40s whose most distinguishing feature was her bright red hair. She was very content with her executive position with a prestigious firm. She came to me in 1988 because she had some unusual vivid memories that she wanted to explore under hypnosis. She was raised on the farm in Mississippi, and had not been exposed to stories of UFOs in that type of rural area. She did not have access to any type of occult or supernatural book or topic. Yet it was in this environment that the events occurred, and the memories were obscured and clouded. Fran remembered several sightings of strange lights over her house when she was growing up, and her car being followed by lights when she was older. Since there was no logical explanation for them, she assumed they might have been UFOs. Strangely, she experienced no fear when these events occurred, yet the people with her were terrified. She had no other conscious memories of anything of this nature, so we decided to, Buried Memories, 147, explore these sightings. I have conducted many of these types of sessions where the subject just added more details about the sighting. We were not expecting anything unusual to come forth. She had one personal problem she thought we might look for if the session went in that direction. It was what I call a karmic relationship problem. She seemed to have had friction with her grandmother since she was very young. She couldn't understand what caused it because she loved her grandmother, but she had the feeling she had done something to offend her. This type of situation is best handled during past life regression to previous lifetimes, if the cause of the friction cannot be located in the present lifetime. So I was not really concentrating on it. I merely made a note of it, and thought we would pursue it if we had time. Fran proved to be an excellent subject, and surprisingly spontaneously regressed to an unusual event in her childhood. I decided to stay with it and ask questions, because normally the subconscious does not bring up an incident without a reason. She was once again a child of 7 years old. Her mannerisms and facial expressions were amazingly correct for the age she was reliving. At that young age, she was sitting cross-legged in the middle of her bed playing with a set of little china dishes. It was a special event because she was not allowed to play with them, since they belonged to her grandmother. But she thought it would be difficult to break anything if she played with them in the middle of a big bed. She giggled gleefully as she handled the little pitcher and cups and saucers. She remarked, "They don't belong to me. I play with them. Father is here, and he is showing me how to have fun with them." It turned out that the person she was talking about was not her biological father, but he had asked Fran to call him father. Apparently he was not a stranger, but someone who came to see her regularly. I asked for a description. She described a very tall and thin being standing at one side of the bed. He has on a cloth that just hangs over his body. It doesn't look like clothes like I wear at all. She hesitated about describing his physical features. It's hard to look at him. His face looks like when you mold clay, 148, the custodians, and you mix it real slick. He doesn't have any hair or any eyebrows. His eyes are big and dark. But it really doesn't matter. He was teaching her how to levitate. He placed his hand over the top of her head, and she felt a tingling as her body and the little dishes rose into the air. She thought it was great fun, and was laughing and talking to him. At that moment her grandmother burst through the door very suddenly. She had heard the talking, and wanted to find out what was going on in the room, thinking that her granddaughter was into some kind of mischief. When she came through the door so suddenly, it broke Fran's concentration. The little dishes fell together and broke. The grandmother couldn't understand how she had broken them, but she was very angry with her, although Fran insisted that she hadn't done anything. Strangely, the grandmother didn't seem to see the being. Did he disappear at the moment she came through the door, or what? Fran had spontaneously regressed to the incident that had caused the anger between her grandmother and herself. The little girl felt angry at being unjustly accused of something she had not purposely done. Of course, even if she had explained about father, the grandmother would not have understood. Fran would have been accused of fantasizing or lying. As an adult, she consciously knew something had happened in her childhood, but she could not remember the incident before hypnosis. I wanted to know more about this being. The child Fran replied that he had been with her as long as she could remember. He would often meet her in the woods, and walk and talk with her. He shows me how to listen, and hear things big people don't hear. He shows me how to see colors and things that the big people can't see. It's beautiful. D. When he comes to see you, how does he come? F. Confused, I don't know. He's just standing there. And sometimes I discover he's there, and I walk up to him. Sometimes I know he's going to be there. I don't know how I know. I know in my mind that he's going to be there. Buried Memories, 149. D. Do you ever meet him anywhere besides the house and the woods? She hesitated to answer. She had probably never talked about this to anyone else. I'm just curious. You can tell me things that the big people don't believe. It's good to have someone believe you, isn't it? F. Yeah. He believes me. D. I bet he does. But have you ever been anywhere else besides the house and the woods with him? F. I think so. There's this light in the woods. It's a big light. There are stairs that go into this light. He's with me, and we went up the stairs. D. Where did the stairs go? F. Into the bottom of this big light. She described walking up steps made of light. At the top of the stairs was a metal doorway. It looked gray like metal, although it felt soft when she touched it. He wanted to show this place to her, but explained that she couldn't stay very long. There was a hallway, and doorways going into rooms. But the doorways looked strange to her, composed of different layers. There's an area where I'm not supposed to go, into the big room. This one is okay. In the room she was allowed into, there sat a metal-looking cylinder supported on a form-fitting platform. It's real shiny. And that other metal on the doors was not shiny. I was trying to get an idea of the size of the cylinder. It's not quite big enough for me to get into. If I lay down, it would probably come up to about here on me. Her nose, but I couldn't get into it, because it's not big enough around. There's supposed to be some kind of animal in there. The being was carrying some eggs he had taken from a bird's nest in the woods. He told her he had to put them in the room. That's how I gotta go. D. What did he do with the eggs? F. Her voice was childish. Oh. He put them away, in A. In that thing. Pointing to the left side, I don't know. 150. The custodians. Exactly what that is over there. It's strange looking. It's got some light to it, but it looks like cloth of some sort. But it's not like normal cloth. And he puts the eggs over there. I wonder why he did that? D. You mean like a curtain? F. Yeah, kind of. But this is different. It's got light in it. He says it's to help them hatch. Oh. It keeps it warm. I like to see things like that. D. Then he brought the eggs in to watch them hatch, and that's why you got to see that room. She tried to explain in her childish way that there were more of those tanks in other rooms, and the baby birds would be put into one of them to keep them safe. F. They have different things, different animals, in the tanks. I don't think they come from here. That animal. He didn't come from here. D. Where do you think it came from? F. The stars. That's where Further comes from. D. That would be a long way, wouldn't it? Did he say where? F. He said I wouldn't understand. He just said, the stars. D. Well, that would explain why the animal would be safer inside the tank. F. I suppose so. D. Did he show you anything else? F. No. We have to leave. We have to go back out. It's just time to go. D. That was fun. Wasn't it? F. It sure was. I want to go again. Giggle. He likes my red hair. D. He does? Maybe he likes it because he doesn't have any. She laughed. D. Do you go back outside? F. Yes. The stairs are like white light. It's different, but you can step on it. When I was back in the woods, Father, Buried Memories, 151, tapped the center of my forehead with his finger, and I keep hearing the word forget. I tried to find out if she ever saw him again, or had any more adventures with him. But sadly, he told her he couldn't come anymore after the incident with the dishes, because he had gotten her into trouble with her grandmother. He said she would have to forget all about him. I sensed that he had a genuine affection for the child, and really didn't want to leave, but felt compelled to. He seemed to be enjoying the interaction with her, and the teaching he was exposing her to. If she had any other involvement with him, I was unable to find it in her memory banks. Either the suggestion to forget about him worked, or he didn't return. The remainder of the session concerned the sightings she had, and only mundane information came forth. Beverly was an artist in her 40s, She officially called herself an artist, but that type of occupation doesn't always pay the bills. So she had turned to sign painting in order to make a living, and to her surprise she was successful at it. However, she still pursued her painting in her spare time. She lived in an unusual house that was built totally into the side of a hill in our Ozark Mountains. It was like living in a cave. The only hint of the outside came from light shining through the door and windows on the front wall. This was where our sessions took place in 1988. Beverly wanted to explore her past lives in hope of finding explanations for problems with her health and money, the lack of it. This was what we intended to do, but often the subconscious has other ideas. In which case I always go with it, because there has to be a reason for the subconscious bringing something up. Usually it is something the subject needs to know about, rather than the intended purpose of the session. 152. The custodians. During our discussion before the session, Beverly told me about some strange experiences in her childhood that she had never forgotten. They did not worry her. She mainly considered them a curiosity. When I was in first grade, there was an incident when a girlfriend of mine, Patricia, and I supposedly ran away from home after school. There was a huge wooded field across the street from the school, and that's where we went. I have no memory of what took place in there, how long we stayed or anything, but our parents were looking for us. I didn't know how much time had passed, because I didn't have a concept of time back then. I lived 6 blocks from the school, and we were halfway home when my mother found us. I have no memory of what took place during that time at all, except that we really got fussed at for being gone so long. They said school was out at 3 o'clock, and it was almost dark when we got home. They were ready to call the police. The thing that strikes me about it is, if that was my first episode of running away, I should have remembered what I did. At least parts of it, but I don't. All I remember is us going across the street and into the woods. And I don't remember anything else, except being found later and getting into trouble about it. I don't remember having a good time or not. While she was reminiscing about her childhood, she brought up other strange memories. My room was at the back of the house. I liked to be by myself. And I would often go there, shut the door to get away from my parents, sit on my bed and daydream. At least I thought I was daydreaming. I would be sitting on my bed, and the next thing I would kind of jolt, and I would come back to awareness and be on the floor. My mother said I had probably fallen asleep and fell off the bed. But I knew I wasn't asleep. This went on all through grade school. We spoke about many events in her life during the preliminary discussion. This is when I get to know the person, and try to find out what they want to explore during hypnosis. Sometimes their remarks are relevant, and sometimes not. In this case, there were several unusual memories that I made special, buried memories. 153. Note of Beverly's discussion about her childhood triggered another memory, a negative one dealing with nightmares. When I was as young as I can go back to remembering, and this has to be 3 years of age, I had nightmares of giant insects. I know the age because I remember a dog I had then. These giant bugs would get on my bed with me. They didn't hurt me, but they reminded me of walking sticks. They had long bodies and little thin frail feeler type things like insects, and great big eyes. The term walking stick caused me to take notice, because of the other cases involving this type of extraterrestrial. Was she describing alien beings, or just remembering a child's vivid imagination? I didn't want to give any clues of insect-type alien beings I had already heard about. I wanted her to give her own descriptions. They weren't round insects like spiders, they were elongated. There are some bugs that are made that way. One of them is the walking stick, and the other one is the praying mantis. They had appendages up on the front of their body, and on the back of their body. And they were as big as I was. Of course, I was a little girl. They didn't hurt me, but they really scared me, when they would get on top of me. I had a twin bed, and with me lying on it and them on top looking at me, they were bigger than me. Their body didn't touch my body. Their feeler legs or whatever lifted them up above me, so there was a space between their body and my body. There would usually be two or three in the room, but at least one, and they were just looking at me. I had those nightmares from as young as I can remember, all through my early childhood. At that time I had never even seen a movie, much less a scary show. They were a dark color, and had big eyes similar to an ant's, but she knew they were definitely not that type of insect. I would wake up screaming many times. Sometimes I would get up and go out in the backyard to get my dog and bring her back to bed with me. Mother wouldn't let the dog in the house. I was scared of the dark, but I would go out in the dark night and bring my dog back and put her under the covers with me. Then I'd sleep okay. Where I lived houses most of the time, 154. The custodians had roaches, because it was a hot, humid climate. But I didn't dream about roaches. I spent my summers with my grandmother in the country, but I never had the nightmares there. As Beverly kept associating through memories, she brought up another strange experience that had left such an impression she had never forgotten it. It occurred when she was an adult, married with a son and living in a suburb of Houston in the early 1970s. Their house was the only one on the street that didn't have any trees in the backyard. That was not important because they intended to put a pool in the backyard anyway. Beverly's bedroom was in the back of the house, and she and her husband were asleep when she was awakened by an unusual sound. She laughed as she said, "I just knew in my mind it was a flying saucer. And I thought, oh, it's just them again. Don't ask me where that thought came from, because I have no idea what a flying saucer would sound like. When I woke up and heard that noise, it just knew that's what it was." Robert was still asleep, and he never did wake up. I thought it very strange that he didn't wake up and hear it, but I wouldn't disturb him. And I did not get out of bed, to my knowledge. I don't know how long I was awake, but I went back to sleep without ever getting up. Now, normally, I should have gotten up. Most people, if they heard something in the backyard, would get up and go see about it. But I didn't, to my knowledge. I asked her what it sounded like, and her answer was very familiar. It was like a whirring noise, like a high-speed plane. We tried several associations of sounds before she found one that was nearly correct. It didn't sound like an airplane propeller. You know how a children's trot sounds when you spin it on a table? A singing or a whooshing. A high-pitched spinning sound, like wind swirling real fast, then magnify that sound a little. It wasn't very loud. I mean, it wasn't as if the whole neighborhood would have been awakened by it. I suggested the sound of a helicopter, but that would have been louder and a different pitch. Another association, or like a washing machine when it's on spin cycle, except that I knew it was faster. And I'm sure I was not asleep. I laid there and buried memories, listened to it, and I thought, well, it's just a spaceship in the backyard. I wasn't scared. I just went back to sleep, as far as I know. This did seem like a strange reaction. Normally the first thought upon hearing an unusual sound at night would be that someone was in the backyard and they might break into the house. Your first reaction would be fear, and then you would probably get up and look out the window. I agreed that all of these memories were indeed strange incidents. I made notes of them. But our first concern was finding answers for her current problems, not the exploration of UFOs, which she said she was not interested in anyway. Beverly then changed the subject and went on to discuss her many physical problems. All her life she had strange and unusual symptoms that were difficult for the doctors to diagnose. This got to the point where it had become a joke. They never knew what was wrong with me. Even when they ran many tests, they couldn't agree on what it was. They were never sure about anything. It was the same thing when I went to large hospitals for diagnosis. They assured me they would find out, but then backed down when they couldn't pinpoint it. That was frustrating, to drive 13 hours and be charged $2,000 for medical tests, and they still can't tell me what's wrong with me. Some of these problems existed at the present time, so this was one of the areas she wanted to explore. She wanted to find out why she had so many physical problems, and where they came from, presuming that the cause of this type of karma could lie in another lifetime. Her continuing money problems were also a concern to her. So when we started the session, health and money were to be our main focus. The childhood memories were only interesting sidelines. After Beverly was in deep trance, I used my technique that should have put her automatically into another lifetime. Instead, she saw only various swirling colors. This often happens and can be moved beyond. After giving her deepening suggestions, Beverly began describing a scene from her present lifetime. She was once again a child of 6, reliving her first day at school. 156. The custodians. With high-pitched giggles, she talked about being left behind in the bathroom and becoming lost in the corridors of the big school. It wasn't frightening, it was an adventure. With childish mannerisms and speech patterns, she went into much detail about her teacher and her friends in the first grade. There was also much description about the physical layout of the school. The subconscious never brings up an incident without a reason. So it occurred to me that this might be a perfect opportunity to explore the memory of running away into the woods across from the school. D. Well, are there woods around the school? B. They're over across the street, not the busy one but the side street. It's kind of spooky in there. I don't go in the woods. But I could. D. What's spooky about it? B. It's dark where all those trees are. But there's not anything in there. Just a lot of trees. It gets dark early, too. D. All right, Beverly, I want you to move forward in time to when you went into those woods with your girlfriend one night after school. What was her name? B. Patricia. D. All right. It's that evening, and school is out. Have all the kids gone home? B. No. They're out on the playground. We're just wandering around. D. Had you ever been in those woods before? No. Why did you decide to go in them on this evening? B. Soberly, we're running away from home. D. You are? Why are you doing that? B. Because we don't like it there. D. That's a rather drastic thing to do. B. Well, it'll serve them right. D. Why did you want to run away? Did something happen? B. No. Nothing. We just decided that we would because we didn't like it at home. Besides, we should be able to go places sometimes, now. Buried memories, 157. D. Why now? B. Because we're big, and we're in school. D. Aren't you afraid you'll get lost? B. Well, we'd probably go back home. I don't know if we would stay away forever. I think some of the kids have crossed the blacktop road before. It's not a real street. You know, it's just that road. But I think other kids have done it. D. Well, tell me what's happening. B. We just wandered inside. The trees are really big. There's no grass. I mean, you can walk between the trees. It's got pine needles and stuff like that on the ground. It's not grass like in your yard. D. What did you do in the woods? Pause. Facial expression and eye movements indicated something was happening. What is it? B. Confused, I don't know. A long pause. I don't think I'm supposed to talk. I don't think I'm supposed to do anything. Don't know where she is, but I don't think we're supposed to do anything. D. Where who is? B. Pat. D. Isn't she with you? B. Pause, I can't see her. I think I'm frozen. D. Your mind isn't. And your mind can speak to me. And it won't bother you at all. It knows things and it can talk to me. B. It's like. It's wiped clean. Like windshield wipers do. D. What do you mean? B. I don't know. Hand motions, it's curved. Hand motions, it's just out in front of me. And I'm not supposed to do anything. D. Can you see through it? B. I don't think I'm supposed to look. D. I don't want you to do anything that will get you in trouble. I'm just curious. Where did it come from? B. Pause. I don't know. I was just walking in the woods, and I think it's pinkish. She was becoming frightened. It's 158. The custodians, like a shield. Her voice quivered and tears came from her eyes, in front of me. She was now openly crying and sobbing as a child would. It makes me feel like I can't move. Obviously upset, I talked to her soothingly so she would relax and stop being emotional. After a few minutes, the loud sobbing stopped. I tried to reassure her that she could talk to me and tell me what was happening. She began to calm down. "D, you said it is a pinkish color?"